Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The disturbances continue following the Stockley verdict last week. We're going to look at it from a couple of different perspectives today. News editor Shula Newman will give us an update along with reporter Ryan Delaney. We'll also talk with representatives of the Ethical Society of Police a little bit later. But first, Shula and Ryan, thank you for being with us. Catch your breath a little bit from a very busy couple of days.
Just a little.
Shula, where are we right now in this story?
So right now we are witnessing exactly what the organizers of the protest had promised before the verdict came out, and that is ongoing sustained protests designed to target economic areas, designed to bring awareness to people who could easily just be comfortable and never think about these issues.
But there are two demonstrations. There's a daytime aspect and a nighttime aspect.
Exactly. The daytime protests are highly organized, highly strategic, and very calm and quiet for the most part. They are, like this morning, for example, there was a protest in downtown St. Louis where the protesters marched silently for several blocks to City Hall, where they then had some speeches. Some of the leaders made some speeches and then got everybody revved up and chanting and then dispersed. And each night there have been, the protests have moved from neighborhood to neighborhood, and they don't let people know where they're going before they go, which is strategic, again. But then they show up, for example, at West County Mall on Saturday or in downtown St. Louis on Washington Avenue. And at 9:30, 8 o'clock, the organizers say, okay, we're done with the protests, and everybody disperses. A problem is afterwards, there's always this group of people, and I don't know who they are. We're trying to figure that part out, who seem to be there wanting confrontation.
Two groups, clearly two groups, no question about it. Ryan, let's get even closer to where we are at this moment. You were out this morning because there are a couple of things going on in local high schools.
Yeah, I was at two different high schools, Kirkwood and Webster Groves, although we know that similar activities happened at University City's high school as well. Students organizing walkouts during the morning. I was at Kirkwood and Webster Groves, and about 75 to 100 students probably at both of these left class, and some students spoke, some chanting. Students at Webster Groves took a couple laps around the high school under the supervision of both faculty and some city police officers watching this and making sure that kids stayed basically on the premises. Both high schools told me that this was something that they support students right to demonstrate and to speak out, although they did get marked absent for the class period.
What were the students saying? What were those chants saying?
Similar things that we've heard downtown, things like Black Lives Matter, some Webster Groves students saying that, the color of their skin, doesn't lessen the value of their life. I talked to a handful of Kirkwood students afterward, and this came up while they were speaking as well, that feeling like they don't get enough support as minorities at the school. Some of the kids that organized this and spoke were transfer students, either through the inter-district program, a student from the city. The main organizer of this comes from Riverview Gardens. Feeling like they don't get the attention when these kind of issues come up that they feel like they deserve.
What was the racial mix like?
Fairly diverse. Certainly a lot of Black students out. These were events organized by African American students, but a large number of white students as well. And, these are large high schools, so 100 students is not a huge percentage of the school, but the Kirkwood students, at least, were the organizers were quite happy with the turnout. It was more students than they were expecting.
So I gather that these walkouts were planned, and that the administrators knew that this was going to happen.
Yes, I was told about the Webster Groves one just because I ran into the organizer Friday. She was out downtown. Missing school, I suppose, if I think about the time of it. But her dad was with her. And the Kirkwood one we saw circulating on social media over the weekend as well. I did talk to one parent of a student just to get their permission. And she didn't know her daughter was participating in this, but was okay with it.
This is a little different what you went through this morning compared to what you went through last night, where it was
yes.
A little more active and violent.
Yes, I would say so. I mean, this kind of fits the same mold of, you know, these daytime protests being very, you know, boisterous but peaceful. Last night, again, you know, this was a much smaller portion of the crowd last night that ended up downtown and causing destruction. Started when, you know, this group, about 100 people or so, continued chanting in front of police headquarters and then started walking down Olive and ran into some plastic chairs that were set up for an event at the library. I noticed them there Friday, too, so they have sat all weekend. But when and it was really a, you know, a handful, four or five people that ran ahead of the crowd and just started throwing these plastic chairs, and they got dragged into Tucker, and that sort of set the tone for the next hour and a half.
And 80 of them were arrested, 80 or so arrested yes. last night. Shula, what has the racial mix been like through the weekend in these demonstrations?
Very mixed, and it's notable, especially in comparison to Ferguson 3 years ago. But yeah, there are a large number of white people who are showing out, a large number of other people of color. I know that I believe Duri Bouscarin, a reporter, interviewed a Latino person. So it's definitely not a monolithic effort.
I wonder what this tells us. Do you have any sense of what this means?
It means that this is purely editorializing,
sure.
and I don't, you know, but to me, it means that these protests have been effective, and that the issues that were raised and made apparent from Ferguson have resonated, or at least raised the consciousness of a lot of people that had never thought about these issues before. And these are people who are then willing to take action and be a part of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty apparent and pretty clear.
What did we learn as journalists covering this story from Ferguson to apply to this situation?
Well, there's the tactical stuff that we learned about how to not burn ourselves out as journalists. But I think also we are much, much more sensitive as a newsroom to really hearing the stories and the reasoning behind why people come out to protest, and really trying to flesh out the context, the larger context, and the issues that are sparking these protests, and being much more sensitive to those. We've certainly learned in our reporting since Ferguson that these are issues that we shouldn't be waiting for protests to cover.
One thing that occurs to me, and I know this is not an easy kind of assignment for any reporter who's involved, but Ferguson was a spontaneous act following the shooting death of Michael Brown. It happened immediately after mm-hmm. that. We all knew this was coming.
Right.
So in terms of preparing for that, is it helpful to—
Extremely. Kind of, well, I'll be very grateful for the organizers because of that.
Yeah, right.
No, it was. And that was part of what made Ferguson so challenging as a news organization, was that it, you know, not only did it come out of an unplanned event, but it was so impassioned and unpredictable that it was very difficult to plan for it. Whereas this time, you know, we were warned and we had a plan in place for how we were going to distribute our resources to make sure that we were covering things. And that said, we still find every day a million new stories that we should be covering that's related to the protests. And, you know, that's our goal moving forward. Stay tuned.
Ryan, what have you learned as a reporter covering this story?
Well, I was not here 3 years ago as a journalist in St. Louis, or any other capacity, I should say. You know, I did not speak to a single person who was surprised about this, about the judge's decision on this, the acquittal. You know, and I have talked to some people. I talked to a woman last night, you know, before the sun went down, who this was her first time protesting. Her church group came out, and she was hesitant about it, had seen the news. Her husband's a retired military person. She lives on near the Air Force Base. But she felt it important to come out. You know, I ran into someone who was just visiting from Washington, D.C., and a couple people who happened to be driving through Midtown and just saw the protests and got out of the car and joined and witnessed. I think the big thing that myself and my colleagues, I've heard it over and over again, is the tone. It's very easy to get caught up in the destruction and the arrests and the pepper spray and all that moments. But these are largely large groups of people who protest very peacefully for several hours, and it's a much smaller group that starts to cause some of the mayhem afterwards.
That's a perspective that we always have to keep in mind.
Yes.
Always have to keep. We'll let it go at that. I know you guys have to get back to work. Another busy day, probably, and probably another busy night. Shula Noon, Brian Delaney, thank
you
so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Coming up, the Ethical Society of Police and its take on all of this. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Joining me now are two representatives of the Ethical Society of Police here in St. Louis. The ESOP has taken an outspoken position on the Stockley case and lobbied for conviction. Joining me in studio to talk about what's next are Reddit Hudson, a former police officer and spokesperson for the Ethical Society of Police. Also with us is attorney Anthony Gray. He is also, of course, with the ESOP. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us.
No problem. Thank you.
Can I make a quick note?
Yes.
I'm actually the co-founder of the National Coalition of Law Enforcement Officers for Justice, Reform, and Accountability. I'm a former member of the Ethical Society. I was a member when I was a police officer, and I have made joint statements with Sergeant Heather Taylor, who is the president of the Ethical Society.
I wanted to ask you about that National Coalition as we continue discussion. That was Reddit Hudson speaking just there. Anthony Gray, let me get your take on what's going on right now after the verdict.
I think what you're seeing is a public reaction to what many consider to be an injustice that occurred on Friday. And so to the extent that there's this protest, whether silent or very vocal, it's in direct response to that outcome. And so that's where we are right now, and that's what the community is experiencing for the most part.
You were, of course, heavily involved in the Michael Brown story.
That's true.
And what influence did that have on what's happening now, do you think?
Obviously none in terms of the system itself. And then it's more of a carryover in terms of what we're seeing in protesting and those that are coming out. It seems to be a carryover from the attitudes and the sentiments of the outcome of that case. Mm-hmm. So,
we had some of our reporters on just a couple of minutes ago. I'll ask this to you and then move on to Reddit. Mm-hmm. And because of the racial mix of the protesters now, they really feel that there's a greater sensitivity because of the Michael Brown case to the kind of events that we're talking about. Do you think that that's the case?
Well, I do. I mean, obviously, when you look at the composition of those that are out there, it does seem like there's a greater presence of Caucasians and others that are non-African Americans that seem to be coming to the defense of what has been a historically African-American kind of a situation, so to speak. And so I do find that dynamic shifting, find it interesting, and hopefully something can become of that in a positive way.
Reddit, your take?
I agree with what Anthony is saying, and I think what you see is a reflection of the growing awareness, especially on the younger generation, of the fact that race and racism impacts our criminal justice system. It obviously impacts outcomes as it relates to officers that shoot citizens. And I think it's encouraging to me to see that we've seen this kind of coming together across racial lines, across all kinds of cultural lines, LGBT folks, Muslims, Jews, Christians, all out for justice.
Do you think the ESOP was very vocal prior to the verdict in lobbying for conviction of Justin Stockley? Do you think that that served a useful purpose? Do you think because of the language that was used and the points that were made that that could have contributed in any way to what's going on now?
I think it served the purpose of letting more people in the general population know that there are officers who risk their lives every day, who sacrifice every day to ensure our quality of life, who are disgusted with what they saw Jason Stockley do. The same heroes that we give credit to every day for the work that they do for us, in their number are those who know that Jason Stockley should have been convicted. They're disgusted by the verdict, and they want to see change in the way that police are held accountable or not when they violate the civil rights, civil liberties, human rights of the people that they've been sworn to serve and protect. That's not to say that every officer is a bad officer, but we know, and we've seen case after egregious case, whether it's Eric Garner murdered on the corner in broad daylight, Walter Scott shot in his back while he's 30 yards away from the police officer who claims he feared for his life, and we see him plant a taser next to him after he murders him. Tamir Rice. You could go down the list. We have got to come to a place where people inside the law enforcement community, police officers, judges, prosecuting attorneys, defense attorneys, corrections officers, collectively decide that we want equal treatment under the law to be a reality and not just a narrative.
Anthony Gray, same question to you. Was anything inflammatory, do you think, in the position that the ESOP took prior to the verdict?
Inflammatory? No. Yeah. I agree with Reddick. It was a sense of the organization feeling that accountability is the central principle that was at operation. Mm-hmm. Accountability. And so they articulated how they thought accountability should be shown in this situation, using words that some may think were a little strong. Well, I think on the issue of people being held accountable for their behavior should be stated in a very strong and firm way. And that's what the organization did. So anyone that wants to take that as an antagonistic thing probably had that preconceived before the words were even spoken.
And Don, I would argue that there are many officers, many of them represented by some of the police unions around the country, that think the call for police accountability itself is inflammatory in any instance. The idea of calling for a police officer to be held accountable for his or her actions, there are officers who think that in and of itself is inflammatory.
Mm-hmm. As an attorney, Anthony, do you have the sense that the letter of the law was not upheld in that verdict?
I can tell you from my standpoint, I want to be careful in terms of criticizing a member of the bench. But I could tell you the feedback that I'm getting from an overwhelming majority of people, that the letter of the law was not followed, that Stockley got a benefit of a doubt that's not generally seen afforded to members of the community that are outraged by this. I was there every day, gavel to gavel, watching this evidence, and I saw one lie after another lie come from this officer's mouth. And even in the midst of these contradictory statements, contradicted by video, the judge still gave Stockley, at the end of the day, the benefit of the doubt that what he said caused him to shoot Anthony Lamar Smith was based on some reasonable fear, when everything else he said he did in the aftermath of that shooting was a provable lie. No one else is afforded that type of benefit, Don, and it outrages people to see Stockley get that benefit.
Would you think, and again, we're getting into opinion here, and
sure.
I'm sure you don't mind expressing yourself. Should he have been, Stockley have been charged with first-degree murder? I mean, he probably would have been convicted on a manslaughter charge. That's what I hear from attorney friends.
Right. Well, that's contradictory to the judge's order. The judge's order contemplated lesser included charges, and he dismissed the notion that any of them would have applied to this scenario. Of course, a first-degree murder charge is what you go for and is what he should have been convicted of. Why? Because he said he was going to murder him. 45 seconds later, he's dead. So he went in it with a murderous attitude, and he took advantage of a scenario in which he shot a person point-blank range 5 times. And, you know, there's no justification for 5 shots under the scenario that we just saw.
And he shot him after ordering his partner to put him in a condition to be shot by wrecking his car, run into him so we can stop his vehicle so I can get out. Not only that, when they recover the gun that Anthony Lamar Smith was alleged to have had, it not only has only Jason Stockley's DNA on it and not Anthony's, but Jason Stockley's DNA is found underneath the screws of the gun where you assemble and disassemble a gun. That is, it's a fantasy to think that that gun was in the possession of Anthony Lamar Smith before he was killed.
I want to take a call here because, as I understand, what Kate in Tower Grove neighborhood wants to talk about is relevant to what we're discussing here. So let's bring Kate into the conversation. Kate, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me and for having this show. It feels really important. My question is about the culture of policing, and in my experience and from reports of people I know who are on the ground at the protests during the day and also after dark, is that there's a lot of tactical approaches being used by police officers that are provocative. So, for example, and agitating to the protesters, inciting them to violence. I'm not excusing anyone who initiates it, but I can't help but wonder and really wish that this would be covered in the media, the ways in which the endorsed tactics of policing in this city and across the country are not about protecting the rights, the civil rights of protesters, but are actually inciting them to violence. On Friday night, they trapped several hundreds of protesters, in fact, in a Jewish synagogue, were banging on the outside of the synagogue doors, intimidating the protesters, threatening mace if they were to leave. These were peaceful protesters, many of them trying to get home.
Kate, we're running out of time, and I think we have the gist of your point here. Yeah. Let's get a response, I'll turn to Reddit first.
I would say to Kate that if you think that police officers would do that with a group of people who are inside a place of worship, imagine what those officers do with people on the streets that they encounter. Yes, there is an adversarial posture in many instances on police departments when they feel that someone is calling for accountability. I think the call for accountability in and of itself antagonizes some officers. They then have the power and authority to act in any way that they decide to toward those who they feel have antagonized them, and so sometimes things escalate.
And if you don't mind, Don, just real quickly, there is also this notion, at least in my mind, that I see in officers. I get a sense that their perception of the uniform that they're wearing is not a blue one. Mm-hmm. And the way they act, it almost seems as though they view that uniform like a camouflage outfit. Mm-hmm. That when they come to work, they're actually facing somewhat of an enemy. And that mentality is manifested. The uniform is blue for a reason. And you notice, listen to the nomenclature. It used to be a time where it was protect and serve was the theme. Now it's law enforcement. So the whole nomenclature and behavior is starting to shape into a way that you feel like these guys got on army camouflage as opposed to a blue uniform and a badge. So the culture is bad.
Are the officers acquitting themselves better during this period right now, Reddit, than they did during the Ferguson situation?
I would have to say that there are. I know some of them, and some of them are white, and some of them are black. There are officers also who are continuing to abuse their authority. Some of them are white, and some of them are black. Yeah. But I do think that we've seen some level of improvement, however small, in the approach of some of the officers that I know that I've had a chance to interact with about how to approach service in our community, especially at a time like this.
I would agree with that.
Where do we go from here, Anthony Gray?
You know, it's almost as though, Don, we have to wait for the next incident, and let's knock on wood that it doesn't happen. You don't change what just took place. Jason Stockley will not go to jail. He will not be held, quote-unquote, accountable. Although, as radical as that might sound to people, to hold officers accountable. So this incident is almost behind us. An individual is going to express themselves until they get tired of expressing themselves about this past. We're only going to know if this made a difference when it ever happens again, and let's just hope that never happens.
And I would say that I hope to continue my work in trying to create a critical mass of law enforcement folks and people in the criminal justice system who together can start to challenge the institutional racism that's at the foundation of our criminal justice system from the inside. We know we won't have everybody with us. We'll have people pushing back against us, white and black. But I think that there are enough of us now who understand what's at stake going forward for us to get that done.
You're speaking now as the co-founder of the National Coalition of Law Enforcement Officers for Justice, Reform, and Accountability.
Yes.
That's Reddit Hudson, sometimes a spokesperson also for the ESOP. Yes. And Anthony Gray, thank you so much for being with us.
No problem.
Any final thought you have?
Well, I think we pretty much covered it all, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of the Ethical Society. In my position with them now, I'm the general counsel to the executive board. So I give advice and counsel to the president and executive board members, just for the record.
And, okay. For myself, I would call for law enforcement in this region to continue to recognize the constitutional First Amendment rights of the protesters. That's not a right that's granted to of these protesters by the police. It's a right that's granted to them by the Constitution.
Okay. I can say amen to that.
We will leave it at that. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Reddit Hudson and Anthony Gray, great to see you, and thank you for being with us today. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.